Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts when we come back. Many of the lessons that you hear on the Law Hour are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure. And this class includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses and ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits and evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And we don't cover just what goes on in the courtroom either. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, and what papers to file and how to file them, and how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, and how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this law school. For more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's very informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. So if you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967, or get online and go to georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about contracts, and more specifically, in the last couple of programs, we've been talking about a thing called adhesion contracts. Adhesion contracts. Now, an adhesion contract is a unique form of contract. It's a little bit different than what we call a meeting of the minds. We think of a contract as where you and I sit down and we hammer out an agreement. You do this and I'll do that. An adhesion contract is a take-it-or-leave-it contract that takes a number of forms. Social Security is an adhesion contract. A driver's license is an adhesion contract. They're called with specificity in the dictionary that they're not contracts. They'll tell you that very plainly. But a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. There are four elements now to a contract. And Kessler on contracts points out that these contracts take the form of codifications. They come from the Roman civil law. And here in America, we're in a transition period between the justice system that came from Moses and the Ten Commandments. And we're in the process of shifting over to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto from the Ten Commandments. And we're in the process of changing our justice system to the adversarial system. So when you go into court here in America today, and it's true in all Anglo-Saxon countries around the world, we no longer are interested in justice. Justice is not the name of the game. What we're doing here is we are performing the old fire walk. It's the fire by trial or trial by fire that we're practicing, called the adversarial system. It's a contest between you and the prosecutor. Now, it's really no contest because here in America, when you have a legal problem, you go to an attorney. Now, the problem you're having is with your government. And so the government summonses you into their court. You know, the government summonses you into the Superior Court of California. So there'll be an action titled the State of California versus Joe Sixpack. And it tells you who the parties to the action are. And these actions are predicated upon contract. It's predicated upon an adhesion contract. It's predicated upon an agreement that you made that you don't know anything about. It could be a social lady hauling you in before the Superior Court of California arguing over your homeschool program. It could be the State of California hauling you into court arguing about your ability, capacity to drive an automobile. It can be over a number of things for which there has never been a meeting of the minds. And indeed, there's never even been any discussion concerning this event that has transpired. But there's a contract there. There's a contract that you didn't know anything about. For instance, constructive quasi-contracts include obligations founded upon statutory duties. I mentioned that to you last time. That comes from a case called Donovan versus Kansas City. and United Burton Company. Now, a debt resulting from a normal agreement or contract has always been the result of a promise to pay, and it invoked a remedy in the form of assumption. So we talked about that last time. If you had a normal agreement, we'd have a penalty clause in the contract. The Ten Commandments are an agreement. It's a contract for which there's a penalty clause. Did you know that? Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28 spell out the penalties for non-performance on the contract. And the way that contract came down is fairly simple. It's called the Old Covenant, and that Old Covenant is recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. So there's the terms and conditions of the contract. It was actually a meeting of the minds. It was imposed by a strong unilateral power, a guy that we call God. He was up on top of a mountain we call Mount Sinai, and he specifically iterated the terms and conditions of the contract. He imposed the terms and conditions upon us. It was adhesion in nature. You never had an opportunity. You were never there. And it inures to the heirs and the sons forever. But the thing that binds it to you is that your great-great-granddaddy here 84 generations back, he said, and this is recorded, by the way, it's recorded in the contract. In Exodus 24, verse 8, he said, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient." Now, of course, today our problem is we have not fulfilled our half of the contract. God fulfilled his half. He gave us the articulable benefits. You got rain in due season. You used to. You know, you used to get 15 million acre-feet a year down the Colorado. Now you're down to 5. And he said, as a part of the penalty clause, number one, I'm going to take away your benefits. Then number two, I'm going to apply some real nasty penalties on top of that. And that's what we're facing here in the United States today. That's why we're in debt. That's why we have hedge funds. That's why Social Security is bankrupt and Medicare is about to go upside down. That's why you have a dictatorial government in Washington, D.C. with a Patriot Act and Homeland Security and two wars that are going badly. Those are the penal clauses in the contract. Now, an assumpsit cannot be applied to actions of debt where there's no agreement unless the court does so by means of a fiction. And this is called a fiction of law, because in order to support assumpsit, it's necessary to allege a promise, and without agreement, there is no promise. And historically, the courts have adopted this fiction of law, the fiction of a promise, and it has declared that a promise was implied in law. So if we take a look at where we're at here in the adhesion contract, say with a driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate, and so on, let's just pick one, a birth certificate. Your baby is born in a hospital, and a sweet nurse comes in and she says, "Here, fill out these papers over here." And so they give you some papers to fill out for your baby. Now, your baby cannot choose, cannot know or understand the terms and conditions of the Social Security contract. In fact, most of you young mothers out there don't understand it either, but in case you'd like to read it, it's a wild new idea for most of you, but if you'd like to read the terms and conditions of your Social Security agreement that your mommy and daddy made for you when you were a baby, it's in Title 42 of the U.S. Code, Section 301 through 335. And those are the terms and conditions that bind you to the income tax. So you become a taxpayer as soon as you're born, or just right after that. That's an adhesion contract. It's done by your parents in the same way that your parents 84 generations ago bound you to the Ten Commandments. They said, "All that the Eternal has done, we will do and be obedient." So you didn't know anything about the Ten Commandments. You didn't know anything about the terms and conditions of the Old Covenant any more than you knew anything about the terms and conditions of Social Security. But they're binding upon you. They were bound upon you by other people that meant well. I'm sure that they meant well. And maybe Social Security is a good thing after all. I didn't think so, and I withdrew from it. I decided to rescind mine, and so here I am, an old man pushing 70, and I don't draw Social Security. And when I talk to people and I tell them that, they look at me horrified. "Oh my God, you don't have Social Security?" No, I don't. I'm responsible for myself. I'm responsible for supporting myself. I have to do that. Not you, not anybody else. That's what freedom demands. You know, if you want to be free, you have to be responsible. And we don't want to be responsible. We want limited liability, don't we? We want insurance. We want the insurance company to be responsible. So I showed you last time, if the insurance company is going to be responsible for your damages on the highway, the insurance company is going to go to the legislature and enact laws that will regulate your conduct on the highway. It creates what's known as a guardian-ward relationship. The insurance company is your guardian. And so in that guardian-ward relationship, they go in and they say, "Well, this person needs to buckle their seatbelt, because if they have an accident, they might go through the windshield and cause themselves a lot of damage, and so we have to protect them." We do this with people that are insane. We lock them up in mental hospitals, and we strap them into restraints called straitjackets to keep them from harming themselves. We don't want you to harm yourself. And that's why you don't have the same range of freedoms that you had 50 or 100 years ago, because you changed from the Ten Commandments, which demand limited government and individual responsibility. And you didn't want to be responsible for your old age, now did you? So the government came over and said, "Look, sign up for Social Security, create a guardian-ward relationship, we'll be your guardian, you be the ward, and then we will give you this old age and survivor's benefit when you get to be 65. Everybody said, wow, that's wonderful. It's called the third rail of politics today. They said, oh gosh, that's really wonderful. The government, they want to help us. I got a t-shirt here that says, for God's sake, don't trust government. But people trust government. People love government. And government is a contract, and especially democratic government. Now, Queen Elizabeth is an autocrat, and she rules by the divine right of kings. No contract there. No contract. Your contract goes back to 1 Samuel chapter 8. Your contract is with God. You were dissatisfied with God's rule, and you said, we want a king like all the nations around us. So he authorized you to have a king. That's not a contract. That's autocratic government. It's autocratic government from the top down, under the contract or under the terms and conditions of the old covenant that you negotiated by Moses with God, remember? But democratic government is purely contractual. Purely contractual. It's got all the elements. Remember the elements? The element of a contract is an offer. And the state comes to you every 4 years and they give you an offer. We have an offer coming up. It's the offer of Rudy Giuliani for president, or Hillary Clinton for president. When it's winnowed out, government will offer you this choice. And so you'll go in and you'll accept. That's when you vote. You go into the voting booth and you accept the government's offer. The government's going to offer you Hillary or Rudy, and you're going to go in and accept one or the other. There's the offer with the acceptance. Over time is 4 years. With consideration. The consideration are the benefits that government confers upon you as a citizen of the United States participating in this program that we call government, democracy. And we're real busy putting this democratic form of government out around the world. In fact, George Bush says, we're so convinced that democracy is so good for all of you people, we want to give it to you good people there in Iran and Afghanistan. We want to promote democracy in Saudi Arabia, where they have a monarchy. We want to give the world the same kind of tyranny that we have given ourselves here in America. It's called limited liability. We want to give them the same opportunity to be regulated and controlled that we have. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Think about this. Under Saddam Hussein, the autocrat of autocrats, the people of Iraq had no gun control. You could own a fully automatic weapon, even if you were a Shiite. Isn't that special? Now, of course, they have gun control. Under Saddam Hussein, they had no income tax. And today, they have an income tax, courtesy of the Americans. In Afghanistan, to show you how democracy works, the Taliban, an autocratic gang of thugs, abolished poppy growing. They put the heroin producers out of business. But under the American occupation, we have reintroduced a new program over there called democracy. Now, they have the biggest heroin crop in the history of Afghanistan under the American occupation. All right, just thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. That's what you get with limited liability in democracy. It's a contract. It's an adhesion contract, but it's a contract nevertheless. Now, here's what this all amounts to. For the convenience of the remedy, they have made to figure as though they sprung from contract and have appropriated the form of an agreement. Did you get that? For the convenience of a remedy. So if you're going to have a contract, we have to have a penal clause. We have to have a remedy in case you don't make your payments. So in order to have a remedy, they have made, that is our government has made, to figure as though they sprang from a contract. So when you go down to sign up for your driver's license, the dictionary says this is not a contract. Told you very plainly, it's not a contract. Okay. They tell you Social Security isn't a contract, it's the law. Social Security is not a requirement, it's voluntary. Social Security is totally voluntary. The income tax is totally voluntary. Military service is totally voluntary. I mentioned that to you last time. But now, boys and girls, when you go down to the Army recruiter, it's voluntary. But when you go in and sign the enlistment contract, which is an adhesion contract that you don't have any meeting of the minds, it creates what's known as the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You're going to change your law. See, when you walk into the recruiter's office, you're under the Constitution of the United States and the laws pursuant thereto. When you sign the enlistment contract, you divorce yourself from the Constitution of the United States and the laws of the United States, and you voluntarily adopt the Uniform Military Code. That's the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Now, you're in basic training, and the sergeant comes up, and he says to you, open your footlocker for inspection. Now, you know, you're a Democrat, and you have been to public school, and you know that the Fourth Amendment prohibits that the people can't just come over here and demand that the deputy sheriff, the sheriff, the policeman cannot just come up, knock on your door and say, open up, we're coming in here to conduct a search. You know he has to have a search warrant, don't you? Okay. So you'll find that the policeman over here, when he comes up, knocks on your door, he's got to have a search warrant, and so you, now having just joined the Army, believe that the sergeant has to have a search warrant, and so you announce to the sergeant, well, if you want to search my footlocker, then you have to get a warrant, a search warrant. How do you think that's going to fly? Honest to God, do you think that the sergeant You know, here you are at, you know, maybe Fort Lewis, Washington, you know, or some military base. You're standing on the military base. You think he needs a search warrant to search your Foot Locker? Well, I'm telling you, he doesn't. Even if you think that he does. Now, that's because you've changed your law. You did this voluntarily. You went in and signed the contract. You might not know what you signed or what you agreed to. And this happens for you. When you get a social security number, when you're first born, and then you get to be 37 years old, and then all of a sudden you find out, oh my God, there's I got to pay the social security tax. They take my money and I don't like it. But you see, you signed up for it. And you signed up for it when you were a baby. It was done for you. It's an adhesion contract. And now you have to pay the income tax because you have volunteered to pay the income tax. And the social security number is your taxpayer identification number. Isn't that just real special? And then if you were to ask, they'd say, oh, no, this isn't a contract. It's the law. It's the law. And that's what we learned from Kessler. And this comes from the Roman civil law. These are not meetings of the mind. These are codifications. And how does the court then construe these codifications? Well, they construe them through a fiction of law as though they sprang from contract. And any obligation created by law, implied by law, or quasi-contract is not only unscientific and therefore theoretically wrong, but is also destructive of clear thinking and therefore vicious in practice. It needs no argument to establish the proposition that it is not scientific to treat as one and the same thing an obligation that exists in every case because of the assent of the defendant, and an obligation that not only does not depend in any case upon his assent, but in many cases exists notwithstanding his assent. You can have a duty, an obligation, or a responsibility to buckle your seatbelt whether or not you even know about the seatbelt law. It comes from the driver's license. Furthermore, I don't even have a driver's license. I can just be riding in your car and you have a driver's license. Now, the policeman can't give me the ticket for not buckling up, but he can give you a ticket because I didn't buckle up in your car because you have the license, which imposes upon you the duty to make sure, to see to it, to compel, to force your passengers in your automobile to buckle their seatbelts. How do you like that? See, that doesn't have anything to do with freedom. That doesn't deal with freedom of choice. And it's imposed upon you, whether you know it or not. It's a codification, but it's done with your consent. You gave your consent when you signed the driver's license. And you gave your consent when you joined the Army. Now, I think I mentioned, but if I didn't, let me do it right now. There's no such thing as compulsory military service in the United States of America. There isn't today. There hasn't been in the past. And there will not be in the future compulsory military service. It doesn't exist under our Constitution. Now, compulsory military service exists in Russia, it exists in China, and it exists in Israel. But it doesn't exist here in the United States, and never has. Now, a lot of you are sitting there, why, my dad was drafted into the Army. And during the Vietnam War, you know, some of you people are probably from the Vietnam War, and you're sitting there saying, well, I was drafted in the Vietnam War. You know, I had the wrong number. Excuse me, let's think about this for a second. You were drafted, were you? Let's go back in history here. Didn't you go down and register for the draft? Kind of like a parent registering their child with the state, called a birth registration, so they could get a birth certificate. Do you remember that act? You got to be 18 years old, and you went down and you filled out a card and signed your name? Okay. You volunteered. Now, you say, well, I had to volunteer because it was the law. Well, that's true. That's true. You had to go down and give certain information. For instance, it asked you for your name, address, telephone number, mailing address, Social Security number, Social Security number, Social Security number, Social Security number. Do you remember that? Social Security number that you put on your draft registration? All right. Just wanted to point that out to you over here, boys and girls. Now, you didn't necessarily go down and sign up. I did. I was 11 years old. I went down and got my own Social Security number. But most of you out there in Radio Land, you didn't go down and get a Social Security number. You didn't know anything about it. It's already done for you. And somebody said it's the law. And it's true. There's a codification that says you got to get a Social Security number. But what happens if you don't get a Social Security number? Nothing. Nobody's going to put you in jail, but you can't get a job. You know, George Bush says what Americans want are jobs, jobs, jobs. You can't get one of those jobs, jobs, jobs now. Unless you have a Social Security number, unless you're registered under the 8th plank to the Communist Manifesto. So most of you have that Social Security number, so you go down and get a job. You can't register for the draft. You can't be drafted into the Army without a Social Security number. Did you know that? Did you know that if you obeyed God and kept His commandments, you couldn't be a soldier in the Army? You have to violate the Ten Commandments to become a soldier. That's the way it is. So if you obey God and keep His commandments, you can't be a soldier in the United States Army. But if you select or if you elect to practice the Ten Commandments, well, then you have a duty and an obligation. You have a duty to God rather than a duty to the God of the United States or the God of Germany or France or whatever God you serve. So it's necessary to get you to take an oath. This is what makes you a soldier. When you raise your hand and swear that oath in violation of the scripture, in violation of Matthew 5, 33 through 37, when you do that, then you voluntarily bind yourself to this new God. You shift away from the Ten Commandments and you bring yourself under the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's where universal military conscription comes from. It's the eighth plank, the National Industrial Army, Social Security. That's where you get this compulsory military service. I had a guy one time came into class here. His name was Ziggy, and he was back during the Vietnam era. He was convinced that going to Vietnam wasn't in his best interest, so he decided that he would not be drafted into the Army. Now, when you volunteer for the Army, you walk into the Army Induction Center, that is the Army recruiter, and you sign a contract, and then you're sworn in. All right, now, when you're drafted, you get a letter that says, "Greetings, you've been inducted," not drafted, you have been inducted into the United States Army. It's just like getting a letter that says, "Greetings, you have been selected for jury duty, and you have to appear." Jury duty, by the way, is voluntary. It's not compulsory, it's voluntary. And I hear people, like, they say, "Well, I have to serve on jury duty." What's going to happen if you don't? What if you said to the judge, "Judge, I absolutely refuse to be inducted into jury duty"? Well, he'll put you in jail for contempt. He will not put you in jail for refusing to serve on the jury. He will put you in jail for contempt of court. Oh, boys and girls, a big difference here. Nobody's compelling you to serve on the jury. Now you're going to sit there and say, "Well, same difference." Oh, no, not even close. It appears to be close, but it's not. If you don't want to serve on the jury, you have to have a reason why. So you walk in and you say, "Well," and they always swear you in. Now, if you were to walk in there and say, "Well, I'm a Hebrew and I practice the law of God and I cannot take the oath, so I cannot swear that I will accept the law from you, Judge, as you direct it," he will excuse you from jury duty on First Amendment grounds. That's all it requires. You see, to serve on a jury, you have to violate the Ten Commandments. You can't serve on a jury and practice the Ten Commandments. Not in this country. I can't speak for the rest of you people out here, but not here in the United States. So once you agree that you'll divorce yourself from the Ten Commandments and that you'll accept the law that the judge gives you, that you'll follow the court's instructions, and these are called jury instructions, if you'll be instructed by the judge who's going to tell you how he wants you to find this defendant guilty most of the time, the judge will instruct you as to how your verdict is to come out. These are called jury instructions. Then you can serve on the jury. If you were to say to the judge during voir dire, "Yes, I have an opinion, he looks guilty as hell to me," or "Yes, I have an opinion, and that is that jury nullification is the law of the land," the judge will excuse you immediately as being unqualified for jury duty. And you do the same thing when you go down to the Army Induction Center. That's what Ziggy did. He walked in, and they said, "Take a step forward, and then raise your right hand." Ziggy took a step back and one to the left, and he said, "If I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights?" And so they escorted him out. You can't have civil and constitutional rights in the Army. You have to voluntarily waive your civil and constitutional rights to be a member of the Army. That's why we have this all volunteer force. So for those of you who were drafted into the Army, do you remember when you went down to the Army Induction Center and somebody said, "Do you take a step forward and raise your right hand and divorce yourself from the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments?" Do you remember that? Well, they might not have worded it quite that way. Government and government agents lie a lot, and they don't tell you or give you full disclosure. You don't always have all the facts when you enter into these adhesion contracts, but you consented. You consented. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one for yourself, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct. To the best of our knowledge and belief in the law, or an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about contracts this week, and we're specifically zeroing in now on a particular type of contract called the adhesion contract. Now, the information that we are giving you here comes from Anson Contracts, 8th edition, page 362. Now, if you want to look up something like Anson on contracts, you might go to Find Law or to a law library, and then go to the law librarian and say, gee, there's some crazy stuff out here that I would like to look up on adhesion contracts. Or you might go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary and look up adhesion or look up contracts. And you can go to some other sources here, too, on contracts. The Corpus Juris Secundum is one set of books. It's a legal encyclopedia. You could go to Corpus Juris on contracts. That's another set of legal encyclopedias. You could go maybe to American Jurisprudence, AMJUR, it's typically called AMJUR. And then there's a fourth one over here, Legal Encyclopedia on Contracts, which is called Words and Phrases. Words and Phrases. And so you'd look up adhesion contract. That's a phrase, legal phrase. And then there's another neat series of lectures that were done on adhesion contracts done by Kessler, Contracts of Adhesion, cited in the 43rd Columbia Law Review on page 640. Now, that was published in 1943. Again, that's Kessler, Contracts of Adhesion, 43 Columbia Law Review, page 640, 1943. And then there's a Salalis, that's spelled S-A-L-E-I-L-L-E-S. I'm going to pronounce that Salalis or Salalis, D. Law Declaration de Volonté. Now, that's a mouthful. It's a, I think it's French. And it's S-A-L-E-I-L-L-E-S, D-E-L-A, Declaration de Volonté, V-O-L-O-N-T-E, 229-1901. Now, there's also the 53rd Columbia Law Review article, page 1072, published back in 1953, and it was called Ehrenzweig Adhesion Contracts in the Conflict of Laws. That's E-H-R-E-N-Z-W-E-I-G, Adhesion Contracts in Conflict of Laws, 53rd Columbia Law Review, 1953 is the year, on page 1072. So we like to give credit to the authors and the sources of information, and so there's the authors and sources of information. The average Joe Sixpack, you know, you're sitting in your truck, you know, tooling down the highway, you're not very apt to be very concerned about looking this up. But for your information, you know, just so that you know why it is that you file and pay income tax every year, and if you don't, you go to jail, or why it is that Social Lady comes out and dictates and tells you how to raise your kid, so that you'll know you gave Social Lady your consent when you got the birth certificate for your child. You started the process when you got a marriage license, and you didn't pay attention to the terms and conditions that your state, the third party in your marriage. You know, you talk about a big footprint in your bedroom. It's the boy, the girl, and the state. You probably wouldn't invite me into your bedroom, but you've invited the state and its bureaucracy into your bedroom when you got your marriage license. So the combination, marriage license, birth certificate, social security number, and citizenship, those four together give Social Lady absolute control over your child and reduces you to the status of a babysitter over the state's child. So when the state tells you, we want you to raise our child this way, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. You got that, boys and girls? If you have a birth certificate, marriage license, social security number, and citizenship, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. That's not your kid, that's the state's kid. Now, fortunately, in order for a quasi-contract to attach, a benefit must be conferred on the defendant by the plaintiff. So, in order for the state to control your kid, they confer a benefit upon you called free public education. Isn't that just special? Free public education. And now Hillary wants to give us free national health care. Can you see where that's going? Because you see, boys and girls, when you get free national health care, your government will then, from that point on, dictate and direct to you what that health care is going to be, what it's going to do, and who's going to receive it. Now, I mentioned a couple of days ago that the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, decided that the little girls of Texas needed to be vaccinated. There's a new vaccine out on the market, and the state of Texas is helping the Merck Corporation, I think it's Merck Vaccine, helping them sell their vaccine, and so the state's going to buy a bunch of it. And they want your kid to be vaccinated, and they want you to pay for that. And so Rick Perry, good Republican that he is, working for Merck, wanting them to make a lot of money because they give a lot of campaign contributions to the Republicans, he wants your little girl to be vaccinated. Now, it's probably good for your little girl, and it's probably in your best interest to have your little girl vaccinated. I'm not here to argue vaccination. But I came to the conclusion that it might not be good for my little girl, and I want to make that decision for myself. Now, as soon as Hillary is anointed or crowned as our new president, she is going to push through a new Democratic Congress. And here's the part of the plan. This comes from the Committee of 300. George Bush, who called himself a conservative and is a radical, rabid liberal, has instituted so many obnoxious programs, legislative programs, and two wars, that the Republicans are now hated and vilified by nearly everybody in America. So you can rest assured that in the 2008 elections, the electorate is going to go out to the polls and elect a Democrat. Got that? That Democrat is going to be swept into office by the hatred and the discontent that is generated by George Bush intentionally and on purpose. When this new Congress comes into power in the year 2009, they will have the same kind of power and authority that Franklin Roosevelt and the Democratic Congress had in 1933 when they took away your gold and silver. You remember House Joint Resolution 192? And you're going to get national health care insurance. Everybody's going to be insured. Scares the hell out of me. I'm going to have to work awful hard to avoid that. And it's going to lead to a thing called the Mark of the Beast. And all of you people out there are going to be required to go down and get a chip in your right hand and in your forehead. Required. That's right. The law is going to say thou shalt do that, just like thou shalt, you know, register your child's birth. But it's going to be voluntary. It'll be an adhesion contract. And you're going to give your consent. They're not going to do anything to you if you don't go down and get it, but you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade. You won't be able to get a mortgage. You won't be able to get a job without it. You won't be able to buy a car or go into a Walmart store unless you've got this chip in your right hand. And you're going to say, well, then for practical purposes, I have to do it. No, you don't have to. You don't have to. And your creator says, if you do, if you get the mark of the beast, he says, I'm going to come after you. And then, of course, your government says that if you don't have it, you're going to starve to death because you won't be able to work. No man can buy, sell, or trade without it. Now, that's what's coming. So remember, you heard it first here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and it's done by adhesion. And it'll be done with your full consent. Boys and girls, nobody's going to stick a gun to your head and tell you, you know, roll up your sleeve. We're going to stick this into your hand or in your forehead. You're going to go down and say you're going to stand in line like everybody else. You're going to stand in line so you can share the shortage. You're going to stand in line to get your chip, and you'll love it. You will love it. And your preacher will tell you that God himself would be standing in this line to get his chip if he were here today. That's your preacher. He's going to get his chip, and he's going to tell you from the pulpit on Sunday morning, the day that all sun worshipers gather to worship the sun. He's going to tell you, go down and get your chip, and then you'll do it. And you'll do it because if you don't, you'll lose your house, lose your job, lose your car, lose your bank account. You won't be able to buy, sell, or trade, and you won't know what else to do. Now remember, fortunately, in order for a quasi-contract to attach, a benefit must be conferred on the defendant by the plaintiff. The defendant must have displayed an appreciation of that benefit and accept and retain that benefit so that it is inequitable for him to retain the benefit without payment for the value of the benefit. All right, you got a Social Security account. That's a benefit. It has 108 benefits that attach to the Social Security account for which you have to pay for it. And you pay for it with two taxes, Social Security taxes and the income tax. That's what pays for your 108 benefits. Now, a person confers a benefit upon another as respects liability in quasi-contracts for restitution. So if he gives to the to another possession of or some other interest in money, land, chattels, or a chosen action, performs services beneficial to or at the request of the other, or in any way adds to the other's security or advantage, and he confers a benefit not only where he adds to the property of another, but also where he saves the other from expense or loss. I'm going to read that again. You ever wonder why it is the government's always out here trying to give you something? Think about it. The government is always giving you, always offering. Come down and get your welfare, food stamps, and benefits. Get your Social Security. We call it the security blanket. It's unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. All these benefits that come from government. Hell, most of you people couldn't live without those benefits. More than half the people of America are receiving government benefits directly. Nearly everybody receives indirect government benefits, like defense, you know, national defense. Those nuclear submarines out there marauding around in the world's oceans, you know, are out there defending you against Osama bin Laden, see, against terrorists. You're receiving that benefit. Well, that's kind of abstract. But, hey, listen, unemployment insurance, that's a pretty direct benefit. It comes from Social Security, by the way. You can't get unemployment insurance without it. Test me. Next time you know you're unemployed, just walk into the Department of Human Resources for you Washingtonians out there and tell them you want to sign up, you know, for a welfare benefits called Social Security, be the unemployment insurance. And they'll say, well, what's your Social Security number? And you say, I don't have one. And then listen to the response. Tell them, I don't have a Social Security number. And the guy's going to tell you, without a Social Security number, you cannot get unemployment insurance, welfare, food stamps. Now, you can open a bank account without a Social Security number, but you can't get welfare, food stamps without it. So a person confers a benefit on another, this is your government, as respects liability and quasi-contracts for restitution, if he gives to the other person, possession of or some other interest in money, land, chattels, choses in action, that's a right of recovery in interstate commerce, by the way, that's a chosen action. Federal Reserve notes are choses in action, and your government gives you Federal Reserve notes so that you can conduct trade, commerce, business, and industry, so that you can buy, sell, and trade. And you won't be able to buy, sell, and trade. See, when the economy collapses, boys and girls, the government will come back with the solution to the problem. We call it Hegelian, and there's another word that comes to that. It slips my mind right now. Dialectics, is that the word? Hegelian dialectics, I think it's called. And that's where you go out and you create a problem, an insoluble problem, like 9/11. And then you come forward and you say, well, I've got a solution, war on terror. You go out here and you knock down a bunch of buildings and you blame it on the Arabs. And then you say, but I've got a solution to the problem. Well, let's go to war in Iraq. That kind of reminds me of my boy. He was outside one day years ago. He's just a little kid. You know, he's a big kid now. He grew up on me. But he was just a little kid, see. And there was a dog out here. See, there's this dog out here. And this dog over here is trying to take a turkey. And so Ed takes a club and hits the dog for trying to take the turkey. And the dog runs over and bites Thor. Did you get that? Ed kicks the dog, who in turn is so shocked and ticked off, he runs over and bites the kid. That kind of reminds me of George Bush. You know, the Al-Qaeda guys come over and knock down your building, and so you run over and beat up on the Iraqis, who didn't have anything to do with it. The boy, you know, he didn't have anything to do with the turkey. Now, as always, the bottom line is that there are benefits. And that's where my new president, Hillary, when she comes forward with these new benefits, compulsory national health care insurance, and what she's attempting to do there, what the purpose behind this is to take away from you all freedom of choice in health care. See, today, let's suppose that I get cancer today. And I say, well, I'm going to take vitamin C. And of course, all you people know that's crazy. And I'm not here to argue with you. I'm just here to tell you that that's my solution to cancer. I want to take vitamin C. I want to take vitamins and minerals and crazy stuff like that. We all know that the correct response to cancer is cut, burn, and poison. Cut, burn, and poison. Cut, burn, and poison. Can you remember that? That's the conventional. That's the conventional wisdom. That's the normal protocol. But, you know, today, I don't want to do that. Today, you don't want to do that. You know, you got some choice today in healthcare. If you don't want to go to the hospital, you don't have to. But you wait until Hillary's national healthcare insurance program is put into play. And then, at that juncture of time, you will go to the doctor and he will say, well, I'm going to admit you to the hospital for some cut, burn, and poison. And you say, no, I want to take vitamins and minerals. And your doctor is going to have you hauled away in a straight jacket, dummy. Hauled away in a straight jacket. Just like your local highway patrolman does today. If he catches you out on the highway without a driver's license, they will haul you away in handcuffs. Got that? For your health, safety, and welfare. And, of course, the health, safety, and welfare of everybody around you. Now, there's a big story in the news. If you want to see how this health care is going to work, this guy's got TB, since he's running around over here on an airliner, and so they got Julie, you know, Gerberdinger, testifying before Congress. Oh, my God, we've got to change our policy. We've got to do something. Well, get ready, boys and girls, because here it comes. You get the Vaseline out, because that's where you're headed. Now, this kind of dictatorial government isn't possible under the Ten Commandments. But, boy, it's possible under the Ten Planks, and you're going to get more of it. And if you want to know why you're going to get more of it, it's because you wouldn't practice the law of God voluntarily. And so you voluntarily adopted the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, God, the Creator. I'm not talking about sweet Jesus now and Baal and Buddha and all these other guys. I'm talking about the Creator of the universe, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, the guy that wrote the Ten Commandments, the author of the Ten Commandments. He is bummed out. He is really bummed out. And he tells you so very plainly in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And he says, you know, I'm going to come down there with my ass-kicking shoes on, my boots, and I'm going to do some ass-kicking. Now, that's for all of you people over there that have an ass. You know, some people don't have. I got two of them out here. I put two asses out in my North 40 to protect my sheep from the coyotes. And not everybody has an ass. But for those of you that have an ass, remember that the boss is coming back with his ass-kicking shoes on, and he says that he's going to do some ass-kicking. So I just thought I'd point that out. So if you got an ass out there, you want to protect your ass. Now, as always, the bottom line is that these benefits and To whom do these benefits attach, a liability or an obligation? Does a person driving on the road without a license do so at the privilege of the state and therefore is in receipt of a benefit? Hey, the highway patrolman is out there regulating the state's benefits that they're conferring upon you. I mean, after all, they put asphalt down there on the highway and they fill in the potholes, don't they? Do you ever ask yourself, well, where did they get the money to do that? Well, they got it from you, Joe, but they got your consent on the bottom line when you signed up for that driver's license. You registered your car, so you gave your car to the state, just like you did your child. So in case you didn't understand this, in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, there's a specific five-verse prohibition here. It says, don't pass your seed through the fire to Moloch. Don't pass your seed through the fire to Moloch. Well, today we don't kill our children by throwing them in volcanoes. We get birth certificates and we give all of our children to the state. Now, the sun god only requires that you give one child to Moloch. And today, the state requires that you give them all to Moloch. They don't kill them, they just take them. They own them all. And Jim Maddox, your attorney general down in Texas, remember that story? Jim Maddox, you know, he comes along and this was kind of neat. Old Maddox, you know, was asked the question, well, does the state own our children? And then Maddox said, well, not only do we own your children, but we own you too. And here was the statement. It was on Monday, May the 19th, 1986. This question was put to Jim Maddox, the attorney general of Texas. This is an affidavit, by the way, signed by about 15 witnesses. Is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? And Maddox responded, yes, it's true. And not only your children, but you too. Hey, your attorney general, no dummy. Your governor, Rick Perry, is no dummy. He knows who owns those little girls down there. And he has told you babysitters to get out there and vaccinate the state's child if you want to retain your position as the state's babysitter. And if you don't, we'll send Social Lady over and we will change babysitters. That's called foster care, just in case you didn't know. So obviously then the corporate activities and other juristic persons all receive a benefit from the state and have an obligation to pay the penalty for breaching the contract. You have an obligation to pay the penalty when you violate the terms and conditions of the contract, all of you licensees out there. Hey, I'm about out of time. We'll finish this up next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, but let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there. And we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.